thermostasis for the living, for a thermostasis in the legs. We will attempt to read some of the childhood pastimes of Krishna, where Krishna has the calf-herd boy. He's not yet a cowherd boy. And he goes out with his friends. And this is exactly what the boys want, because they have the opportunity to be alone with Krishna. So this is the nature of sakiras, or sakibhav, or the relationship with Krishna in friendship. The boys, they are not ordinary boys, they are most extraordinary. There's one verse in an earlier chapter that says, Itam satam brahma sukhana bhutya dasyam kataram paradaiva dvena maya sritaram narapungavena sakyam vijaru krita punya punya. That means that there are so many different relationships that everyone has with the Supreme Absolute Truth, with Krishna, with God. Everyone has a relationship with him. Everyone is in relationship with him. But most souls in this world, most persons, they have turned their back on that relationship. And instead of acting in relationship with Krishna, we act as if we were the center of existence. So gradually, by good fortune, or by the grace of the Supreme Lord, by agyata sakriti, unknown pious activities, and by the mercy of great devotees, the soul begins his turning towards Krishna. And that is the purpose of sadhana bhakti, the practices. It's so that we turn towards Krishna, from having our back to Krishna, but having in relationship with him consciously. Every soul has a relationship with Krishna, but most in this world, it is not, they're not awake to it, for in the darkness of making believe that we don't have a relationship with Krishna, making believe in illusion, like dreaming, that everything in existence has no, and ourselves as well, have no relationship with the Absolute Truth. And this is specifically the function of Maya, Krishna's illusory energy. So gradually the turning gets made, and there are some souls who see what awakening their relationship with Krishna, and they see that Absolute Truth, that they see Krishna as their worshipable Lord. And then there are some who think of him when they hear the pastimes, the activities of Krishna. They see him, they think of him as an ordinary boy, because what he's doing is called in Sanskrit nadalila, or he's, the activities of this world are a reflection of his activities. He's acting as if he is an ordinary cowherd boy wandering through the fields of Vrindavan, but he's never ordinary. He's always extraordinary. So then the last part of the verse, so some people will see him as Narapungavena, as an ordinary person. And it is very tempting to see Krishna as an ordinary person, because there he is with two arms and two legs, and he's as we'll hear later, he's wandering about the cowherd pastures of Vrindavan with his friends, and they're playing and they're eating together and they're laughing and joking just like they're ordinary boys. But nothing, again, that Krishna is doing is actually ordinary. It's completely extraordinary. It's not impelled. Impelled means it's not driven by the forces of this world. It's driven by the spiritual energy, everything that Krishna does. So the last part of the verse says, Sakyam Vicharu Krita Punja Punja, that to attain the position of having such an intimate relationship with Krishna that one is playing with him and joking with him in such intimacy, this takes births and births of punya, or pious, spiritually pious activities. It is so extraordinary. The relationship is so intimate with Krishna. And here are some of the intimate dealings. And it is not that the cowherd boys, sometimes they may be conscious that he's the supreme, sometimes they're not conscious of he's the supreme. But the real point is that their love for him is so powerful that they don't even care that he's the unlimited supreme absolute truth. If people find out that one of their childhood friends has become a billionaire, has unlimited money, naturally they'll want to make contact with him, and they'll talk about the old days when they used to play together. But what will be on their minds, they'll be thinking, oh, only if he could spare a few $1 million for me, that would be very nice. So Krishna is the topmost of all wealthy persons, Sadaishwarya Purna. He has complete wealth, complete fame, complete beauty. He has every opulence complete. So the cowherd boys, in their dealings with him, their consciousness and their love is so pure, they simply don't want anything from him at all. They simply want to relate to him and have loving exchanges with him. They want to play with him, because that is the nature of Sakya Bhav, of the relationship they have with him in friendship. They just simply want to be with him. They want to play with him. And they're thinking of what's going to give him pleasure. So this is the most extraordinary, the activities of Krishna in the cowherd pastures of Vrindavan, or his dealings with Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, or his dealings with the Vrinda Gopis. They're most extraordinary, the most extraordinary of all things, because although they appear to be like the activities of the material world, they have nothing at all to do with the activities of the material world. So how can the mind deal with these spiritual activities when all our experiences are of material activities? How can we put the activities of Krishna in a category that has nothing to do with matter when we have not very much experience of that category that has nothing to do with matter? We don't have very much experience of the spiritual energy, what it's like to be interacting solely, completely, fully on the spiritual platform, when the motivation for the interactions is coming from the spiritual energy. Because now all the interactions that we have, they're all motivated. The engine that's driving them is the material energy, which means Maya, which means we are caught in this net of selfishness, basically, and full identification with the body as ourselves. But in the spiritual world, it is the opposite of that. It is where everyone, those cowherd boys, have their form as cowherd boys, more or less as a manifestation. They have the perfect spiritual eternal form that is a manifestation of their loving desire to be with Krishna. So they have the perfect form to be with Krishna and have exchanges with him in Sakya Bhav, in friendship. So their form is themselves, and their form is a manifestation of their loving relationship with Krishna. And when they're together with Krishna, there is nothing formal about it. So we cannot imitate this, because when we become informal, then we offend the other. But when the cowherd boys become informal with Krishna, it is just simply a different manifestation of their loving relationship with Krishna. So let's hear what happened. The cowherd boys were sitting after the killing of Agasura by Krishna. The cowherd boys, because they had gone to the forest to have a picnic, and the forest was not an ordinary forest, it's the forest of Vrindavan. And everything in this realm of Vrindavan is this substance. Its substance is composed of ecstasy, practically speaking, of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. It has nothing to do with the all-changing, decaying material realm that's always shifting. But it is, everything is ecstatic. And we can get some glimpse of this if we go to Vrindavan, that there's something so special about that realm. Or during a kirtan, when our consciousness becomes absorbed in the holy names of Krishna, then the result of that is our consciousness becomes on a different level, and it perceives on a different level. Or if we walk into the temple when we are in the correct consciousness, because everything has to do with consciousness. And it's not a mechanical. The mechanical parts we do every day is to evoke a spiritual consciousness, but it has to do with consciousness ultimately. So if we go into the temple room, and even if our consciousness isn't right, but if we are a little bit innocent and open, we perceive, oh, this is the energy here is somewhat, it's different from downtown Perth or downtown Bombay or downtown New York or downtown anywhere. The energy is different. So in Vrindavan, the energy is completely different. Everything is effulgent. Everything emanates bliss. And everything is meant to give pleasure to Krishna. It is a different realm. So Krishna and the cowherd boys sat down by the bank of the Yamuna, where it was very sandy. And the sand is sand, but it's not the sand of this world that gets in your hair and your eyes and everywhere else, and it's troublesome, but it's ecstatic sand. how can we conceive of what that means? But it's vibrating at a different level, so to speak, on the level of purity, on the level of service to Krishna. It's there to serve Krishna. And that is the essential difference between the spiritual realm and the material realm, that the spiritual realm is conscious and it's there to serve Krishna. And everything is alive. In the material world, everything is dead. Even the people are dead in one sense. They're not alive to who they are. So Krishna and the cowherd boys sat down. And the boys opened their baskets of food. This is text 7. Accepting Krishna's proposal, the cowherd boys allowed the calves to drink water from the river and tied them to trees where there was green tender grass. Then the boys opened their baskets of food and they began eating with Krishna in great transcendental pleasure. So this was Krishna's plan that he had arranged the night before and in the morning, was that the boys would go together out into the fields, all together with the calves, and have a picnic. So all the mothers cooked for the pleasure of Krishna and for the pleasure of the boys. And the boys carried on their their shoulders, or they tied up, they had unique ways of tying up the food. They didn't have plastic bags and things like that, but they tied it up in different leaves and things like that, and there were bundles and bundles inside of bundles, and some of them had sticks, and on one end of the stick was one bundle of food, and on the other end of the stick was another bundle. And then during the time when they entered the mouth of Agasura, which was in the 12th chapter, the previous chapter of the 10th canto, some of the acharyas say that they, because they ended up entering this huge poisonous snake, so the food would have become contaminated. So some of the acharyas say before they entered the Agasura, they tied the bundles to the trees before they entered. Or some of the acharyas said they entered carrying their bundles because they knew that Krishna was there with them, so they had no fear about anything. This is another element of a deeply spiritual personality. There is no anxiety and no fear, and its consciousness was extremely brave, because what is there to fear in the realm of matter? And Lake Krishna Mare Krishna Lake K, what is there to fear if you're under the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet? So the boys were just, even if it is a snake, Krishna is here, he'll protect us. So thinking in that way, they entered into the serpent's, the Agajara, the great python's mouth. And some of the acharyas say, even though the food would have been contaminated by the fact that Krishna entered after, that it was free from contamination. In any case, at this time, they were sitting down all together, and they started opening up their, untying the bundles of food. And they were boys. So continues in text 8, like the whirl of a lotus flower surrounded by its petals and leaves, Krishna sat in the center, because everyone wanted to be close to Krishna. It's just natural. So everyone wanted the front row seat, and they wanted to be, so Krishna would be facing them. So, of course, there's practically speaking unlimited boys, so everyone can't sit in the front row seat, and everyone can't have Krishna facing him. But everyone did, because Krishna also wanted to reciprocate. There's one Sanskrit word, ekanista, and another one, bahunista. So it's said that Krishna is bahunista, that because there are so many devotees, his consciousness is focused on so many persons. Bahu means many, and the devotees, their consciousness is only focused on Krishna, so they're ekanista. So in that sense, Krishna says that, oh, you are better than me, because my love is splayed. It is divided into so many because I have so many devotees, but all of your love is so deep. You have conquered me by it because it's focused solely on me. So Krishna, of course, he wants to face everyone. And this is why he is the Supreme Lord in the center. And because he can satisfy everyone, because he has unlimited potency, and our potencies, our powers are just very, very limited. So Krishna, one of his potencies is called Satya Sankalpa, which means, or his Icha Shakti. As soon as he desires something, his potencies immediately act independently to satisfy those desires. So the impersonalists, when they think of the Absolute, the Supreme Lord, they think of an impotent entity. He has no powers. He has no power. He is impotent, no potencies. But Krishna has countless potencies. And one of the chief ones is this Satya Sankalpa, that just this is what everyone in this world wants. Basically, they want a satya sankalpa potency where everything they desire immediately happens as soon as they desire it. But what a dangerous world it would be if everyone had that. Just you get up in a bad mood and there's no one left in the universe. And then if everyone had that, because that's what everyone wants, they want these potencies that all the desires are fulfilled, and then for everyone is so frustrated because we don't have the potency, nor do we have the consciousness, the proper consciousness. So Krishna wanted to be able to, the boys, and this is the nature of the spiritual world, that Krishna is what rules the spiritual world. It's not Krishna, actually. It's not the unlimited Supreme Lord. People think of going to heaven, or they think of the Supreme Lord on a throne or something like that. But that's not actually what rules the Supreme Lord. And it's not the devotees that rule the Supreme Lord, and it's not the Lord who rules the Supreme Lord. It's the love that the devotees have for Krishna. That is what causes the different activities in this very special realm of Vrindavan. It's the love that the devotees have, and based on that love, Yogamaya, or the Krishna's internal energy, his internal potency that erases all the pastimes based on the love of the devotees, that energy causes wonderful pastimes to take place, wonderful activities that cause both Krishna and the devotees ecstasy. Unlimited varieties, continuous unlimited varieties of ecstasy. That's what the spiritual world is like. It is far from nothingness. It is far from emptiness. It is unlimited, continuous varieties, ever-changing varieties of ecstasy. All in relationship with Krishna. It's Krishna interacting with his different... Because we are also part of Krishna. We are also his energy. We are called separated because we have independence. Dinamsa. Vivinamsa. We are also part of Krishna. And therefore we should act in relationship with him. So the energy, the Satisankalpa Shakti of the Lord arranged that Krishna could sit in the middle of the lotus flower of the configuration of himself and the cowherd boys. And everyone could be looking directly at him, and everyone could be in the first row. Countless boys all looking at Krishna and all very close to him. So how is that possible? Well, in the material world, which is dominated by the laws that dominate space and time, that the two objects cannot be at the same space at the same time, etc. But Vrindavan, these laws don't apply, because as soon as there is a law, has to be, like, I remember one time years ago, I was on a train in India, and there were so many laws written on the carriage of how everyone should act, but no one was following any of the laws. I didn't think it was funny, because after there were 15 people sitting in my seat. <I'm not> laughing. Sorry. No, just making it. So there's one thing to have a law, but there's one thing to enforce the law. So how much power one needs to enforce the law? So as soon as there is a law, there must be an enforcer of the law. As soon as we see that everyone is going from boyhood to youth to old age, or girlhood to youth to old age, everyone, there's no one who is exempt from this law. That means that the material energy is enforcing this, upon everyone. So no one escapes from this law, so that the laws of this world even. So just imagine how powerful the enforcer of the laws are. And there are so many laws, the plants, the seasons, the everyone, everything works according to different laws. There's the law of karma, there's the sun rising and the moon rising, everything on schedule. It's actually quite incredible. Recently I was walking somewhere and I saw that the moon was just hanging in the sky. There was a full moon and it was just up there like a big ball. And usually we just walk by and we think, oh, that's the moon. But I wondered, what's it doing just hanging there? Because it's quite exceptional when you think about it. There's this big effulgent golden ball just hanging in the sky and everyone just takes it for granted, oh, that's the moon. Because that's what the moon does. But it's quite amazing. It's just there. On schedule. Every month, twice a month, or once a month, it's the full moon, etc. So this is, there's a lawgiver. But, so that ultimate lawgiver, Krishna doesn't do these things directly, but through his energies. Maya Dakshina Prakriti Siyate Sacharan Charan. But he's ultimately the cause, the ultimate cause of everything. He's by his, upon his power, Mama Angsite Vasambhava. Everything is resting on his potencies. So in the spiritual world, instead of there being fixed laws, there's a different kind of law that works. There are laws, but there's a different kind of law that's inviolatable, that's unbreakable. So the laws of space and time are not inviolatable in the spiritual world. But the law that's inviolatable, that always is in existence, is that everything is there for the pleasure of Krishna. That's the inviolatable law. So for everything to be for the pleasure of Krishna. So therefore space can bend and time can bend and space can accommodate unlimited cows. And sometimes when Krishna walks the Govardhan Hill, the petals of the lotus of Vrindavan, they can bend over and just like take a shortcut, so to speak. And time, one moment can appear to be millions and billions and billions of years. And billions and billions and billions and billions of years can be compressed into one moment. Because again, time serves Krishna's pleasure and Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world. So everyone was facing this most beautiful cowherd boy named Krishna. He sat in the center, encircled by lines of his friends, who all looked very beautiful. Every one of them was trying to look towards Krishna, thinking that Krishna might look toward him. In this way, they enjoyed their lunch in the forest. Prabhupada quotes that verse 2. So here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. To a pure devotee, Krishna is always visible. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Shanta Sadaiva Hridayeshu Valokayanti, and is indicated by Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, Savata Panipadam Tat Savato Chir Chiro Mukam. If by accumulating pious activities, in other words, if we act in this world, everyone acts to get something in this world. There's always something motivating our actions. So, if the fruit of all our actions, if we accumulate enough piety, enough proper Krishna conscious actions, Krita Punja Punja, one is raised to the platform of pure devotional service. So this is what we are doing our service, and we're doing, trying to do serve in proper consciousness. Proper consciousness means anyabhi lasita sanyam jnana kama anavita anakulena krishna sinam. So it means, Jiva Goswami explains this in Bhakti Sundara, that if you perform devotional service that's misra or mixed, that it's so full of me and my desires and what I want, and it's not pure in the sense of it's being done for Krishna's pleasure, then the result won't be prema bhakti. It won't be love for Krishna. Because one has to come to the platform of performing one's activities in pure devotional service. So when one hears that and understands the requirement of purity to actually go to the spiritual world, of course one must be pure to go to the spiritual world. So rather than thinking, oh yes, I can go because everything I do is so pure and I'm so wonderful. That's not, of course, the way devotees think. Rather, they become very, very, very humble. And they think, oh, only if Krishna is, all of Krishna and the devotees are merciful to me, do I have any chance of advancement? Because look at me, everything I do has some contamination. In it. Contamination meaning, it's okay, something for Krishna, but something for me. One for Krishna, two for me sometimes. One for Krishna, seven for me sometimes. Sometimes when I'm Janmashtami, it's five for Krishna and half for me, only a little bit because I'm inspired. But there's always something. Every conditioned soul always will want to take some percentage from everything that's done. But Krishna is very kind and he's very merciful. Also. And also he's called Baba Grahi Janardana, which means that he sees the essence of the mood of one's attempt to please him. So when, and we tend to be just the opposite. We'll see the fault and Krishna sees good. Like in Ajamir, in the story of Ajamir, he saw, oh, he's chanting my holy name. He's calling me. It's my duty to protect him, Krishna Lord. Even though his consciousness was not proper. So Krishna is always visible for a person who is pure. Krishna is always visible in the core of one's heart. One who has attained such perfection is all beautiful and transcendental bliss. The present Krishna consciousness movement is an attempt to keep Krishna in the center. For if this is done, all activities will automatically become beautiful and blissful. So this is all that's required to place Krishna in the center. To act in such a way, if everyone is... Of course, this sounds very idealistic. But if everyone is acting in such a way that for Krishna's pleasure, then everything becomes very wonderful. And everyone advances so much. This is the ideal. So that everyone is acting for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna is in the center. Let Krishna be pleased. And then Prabhupada said, the temple becomes Vaikuntha, Vrindavan, the spiritual world, because Krishna is the center. So let Krishna be pleased. So that's what it's like in Goloka Vrindavan. And when we have that mood, then we can also go to Goloka Vrindavan. In fact, we will be in the spiritual world, even though our feet maybe appear to be in this world. So text 9. There's one part that I will have time. I was just looking forward to this one little part. It's a little detail, but it's so much fun. So amongst the coward boys, some place, so they all had their food with them. And they all wanted to say, oh, my food is the best food. The food from my house is the best. And Krishna, please take some, Krishna. And they would want to put a little in Krishna's mouth, and the boys would always be laughing and playing, because that's the nature, even in the spiritual world, of boys in this particular relationship. They're just playful all the time. They have no cares. That's why they want to hurt the cows, because they just go out and hurt, take care of the cows and just play all day long with Krishna. So amongst the coward boys, some place their lunch on flowers, some on leaves, fruits, or bunches of leaves. So everyone took what was nearby and made a plate out of it, more or less, because they just had their cloths, so everything was wrapped up. So they just took what was nearby, and Vrindavan is manifesting all these things because it's alive and it wants to serve. It wants to serve Krishna, and serving Krishna means serving Krishna's pastimes, and serving Krishna's pastimes means serving the participants in the pastimes. That means everyone's in that mood of service. So Vrindavan manifests all these things that can be used as plates. So some of the boys, so they're very creative. So they take the bark from the trees, they take leaves, bunches of leaves, some, and they put their lunch on rocks, and the rocks are effulgent, and the food is effulgent, and the boys are effulgent, and the trees are effulgent, and the water of the Yamuna is effulgent, and the sand is effulgent, and the birds, and the peacocks, and the parrots, and the kokil birds, everything is effulgent and acting for Krishna's pleasure. So they gathered all these things to put their lunches on. All these things like barks of trees and leaves and rocks and things like that. And thus, this is what the children imagined to be their plates as they ate their lunch, and they're joking and playing. All the coward boys enjoyed their lunch with Krishna, showing one another the different tastes of the different varieties of preparations they had brought from home. Sometimes they would taste it. They'd say, "Oh, Krishna, this is so good. Taste this." And they would put a little in Krishna's mouth. So this is the opposite. Not the opposite, but it is so different from formal religion. And formal religion's purpose is to bring one to the platform of spontaneous religion. And it's like this. So spontaneous religion means that what's motivating one is actually love for Krishna. And the ritualistic formal or Vidhi or Vaidhi Bhakti, or devotional service, or the different rituals and different religions, they're meant to give structure, because otherwise we just do whatever our crazy whimsical minds think is right, and it won't be pleasing because we don't know, because the mind is crazy and whimsical, and it's selfish, and it's impure. So the rules and regulations are very important, but they are not the goal. They provide a structure. This is how you offer a flower. This is how you offer food in the kitchen. If you cook for the deities, the first thing you learn is cleanliness, punctuality, and you never, never like taste anything. So this is, you don't taste it before offering it. So the expert cook learns how to cook in such a way that they know what is good and what is not good without tasting it first. Because it's not good to taste something and then offer it to Krishna. So everything has to be very, very clean, very, very punctual. These type of foods are acceptable. These type of foods are not acceptable. But when one's consciousness is pure and on this spontaneously loving platform for Krishna, then everything is acceptable, because Aslami Paratatmana, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I'm accepting ultimately the bhakti, the devotion by which something is given. He's tasting the devotion by which it's given. And naturally, if there's devotion, then everything will be done in such a way that will be pleasing to the one who we're devoted to. So naturally, if one has true devotion, the cleanliness will be there. Naturally, they'll be offering him just the kind of things that he likes the most. Because devotion means love, and love means wanting to please the beloved. So, and while all this is going on, so they're saying, oh Krishna, this is so good, you taste this, you eat this. And everyone is feeding Krishna. And Krishna's able to accept everything because he's unlimitedly powerful. He accepts everything that's offered because everything is offered with such devotion. But the boys are just playful. And they're laughing and joking and they're tasting it. They give Krishna some, then they give each boy is feeding each other and things like that. Oh, your food isn't as good. What your mother cooked isn't as good as what my food. They're just giving each other food and they're laughing and playing. And sometimes they trick each other. And one boy, this is the Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, says, one boy, they're saying, oh, you eat this, this is so good, this is so good, taste this, you've never tasted anything like this. He secretly takes inside some kind of a cooked patty, he puts some flowers, bitter tasting jasmine flowers. Oh, you taste this! And he sticks it in the boy's mouth, and the boy goes, oh! And then they start chasing that boy around, and then they beat him a little bit, and then they all laugh and they play, and then he cries, and then they take turns and they steal it. And they look at that over there, and they steal all the food, and there's monkeys surrounding them, and the monkeys are just waiting, and the monkeys are stealthily trying to come over, and it's just a huge, spontaneous, laughing, joyous festival with Krishna in the center. And everyone is looking at Krishna, and if Krishna is pleased, everyone is pleased. And sometimes they tease Krishna. And Krishna sometimes will cry, oh, you took my, and the boys, oh, you took my food. Oh, Mother Yasoda is going to be so upset with me, Maya, Yasoda, Maya. This is, and they're exchanging. What's happening is this, everyone is tasting the sweetest of exchange called rasa with Krishna. So what's being generated from this is rasa. What's generated from all these exchanges is ecstatic, devoted emotional experience based on Krishna. So this is technically can be explained as Srila Rupa Goswami explains it. In the Nectar Devotion Bhakti Samhita Sindhu, that it's like a mixture of different flavors, not just even meditation. And that's why Srila Bhakti Samhita Saraswati Thakur says that Shantarasa, just peacefulness, which everyone is longing for, it is not actually considered a rasa, because there is no mixing of different elements to create a variety in tastes. So that's what the spiritual like world is like. There's an unlimited, continuous, ever-changing, ever-shifting, ecstatic variety of taste generated from the pastimes based on the Krishna's love for the devotees and the devotees' love for Krishna. And everything in Vrindavan is conscious and alive and wishing to be part of this great ecstatic festival of pleasure for Krishna by serving in some way or another. So that's what Vrindavan is like. Everything wants to be a part of, because in the material world, everyone wants the central role. In the spiritual world, everyone knows that Krishna has the central role, that he is in the center of the lotus flower. In the material world, someone will be sitting there and saying, oh Krishna, phone call for you. And fish will go, and then they jump into the center. Now I'm in the center of the lotus flower. And that's the whole struggle of the material world, is everyone wants to be in the center of the lotus flower, and everyone can look at them and say how wonderful you are, and you're the most wonderful. That's what the material world is like, but no one can be in the center, because no one can satisfy all the different petals surrounding the center. But there's such a vying for position of power, of influence, and everyone uses their whatever they can to try to get in the center. And that's what the material world is. And someone can appear to be in the center for a short time. And what is the benefit of being in the center? If you're the most wealthy, if you get in your own private helicopter that drives you to your own private jet plane, that drives you to your own private country, and where you're the ruler of that private country, what's the benefit? It's the benefit is when the doors open, and they see in the plane, exiting the plane, everyone sees it's me who's in this powerful position. And everyone thinks, oh, he must be so happy. I'm so unhappy in this world. But he has everything, so he must be so happy. But because he doesn't have the power to please everyone, and because there's always someone trying to knock him off his top position, and because he's envious of someone who has more than him, and he's afraid that someone is getting powerful around him, so there's always so much fear. Oh, someone is the most beautiful person, but then they see a wrinkle or a pimple has come on their nose, and then inevitably everyone gets older. And this, what everyone's, this what's popular today, no one even looks at tomorrow. So this is the material world, but the spiritual world, everyone acknowledges that it is Krishna who is in the center. Krishna is in the center. No one wants to be Krishna because they love Krishna. So the cowherd boys enjoyed their lunch with Krishna, showing one another the different tastes of the different varieties of preparations they had brought from home. Tasting one another's preparations, they began to laugh and make one another laugh. They're just playing. So Krishna, in the next text, Krishna is called Jagyavuk. That means that he, when people are performing different kinds of sacrifices, ultimately he is the one who enjoys those sacrifices. Everything is meant for his pleasure. So when people are performing rituals and sacrifices and making different kinds of offerings, he is the one on the other end, ultimately, who is the enjoyer of sacrifices. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvalokam hishwaram. So Krishna eats only offerings of jagya, but to exhibit his childhood pastime. So that means someone who is following all the rituals of making an offering to the Supreme Lord in every spiritual path, and every religion has its different rituals. But now, the one who is the ultimate enjoyer, he is sitting there with his friends, and someone is putting food in his mouth, and sometimes he's putting food in someone else's mouth. It's so casual, and there are no rules and regulations attached to it. Everything is so spontaneous, and everything is blissful and ecstatic. So he, that absolute truth, is now sitting with his flute tucked between his waist and his tight cloth on his right side. That's over here. He's got his flute here. And he's got a buffalo horn bugle, and the stick for driving the cow driving stick in his left. So he's got his stick in the buffalo horn. The buffalo horn's on a string or rope around him over here, and he's got his stick over here, and he's got the flute tucked in over here, and he's playing and laughing, and he's got it wearing a turban, and now this is the part that I really like. Not that I didn't like the other part, but in his hand, especially he puts it in his left hand, he has some yogurt mixed with rice. And that's not the special part, I think. But he has pieces. Now, I've seen this in India, on buses. I don't know if you've ever been on an Indian bus. But the ticket collectors, they keep different notes. Did you ever see that? Did you ever see that? Yeah, they keep different notes and tickets and things like that. So each of the hand, you have seen what to leave. So instead of having different notes and tickets all well organized in his hand, Krishna was holding the yogurt and rice, and between each finger, one finger he'd have a pickle. He'd have this. Another finger he'd have another different condiment. Another finger he'd have this different kinds of pickles and everything. All perfectly organized for enjoyment. For his enjoyment. And so he would eat. He'd have everything in his left hand. He'd be eating. He'd take a little piece of that. And this way, so this is the supreme absolute truth, the all-powerful, unlimited supreme personality of God. And he's sitting with a flute over here, a buffalo horn over here, a stick over here, yogurt and rice in his hand over here with the pickle and this over here, and mango chutney, and so a little chutney or something over here, and what else? Whatever kind of a good pickle you can have, amla. Some mango over here, some especially you have to have lemon because it's very good for the more too good for digestion and this and that. And the mothers had cooked so many different things, and the boys are saying, "Oh, that's not as good as mine. You try this and put this in here," and they're just playing, and they're treating it in such a casual way. So I must have mentioned this before. So one time I went to Italy. You never got a taxi job that took you to Italy and Rome, did you?
Yeah.
Did you ever go? No. And I went to the Sistine Chapel. Did you, Vera, have you been there?
Yes,
there we go. So, it's the most amazing place. I mean, not
being
the most.
When I was there, that I couldn't hardly see any of the paintings.
Because what happened?
Being restored.
Oh. In the spiritual world, everything is eternal. Nothing needs to be restored.
It was God up there, but I couldn't see him.
Yeah. So, in any case, there's so many. When I was there, it wasn't being restored, so I could see certain things. And there were so many different paintings and carpets, very intricately, carvings and statues. That are all very Christian-based, of course, Catholic-based. So there was one that really stuck in my mind. Everything was so ornamented and elaborate, quite wonderful, and very inspired one with a religious feeling. So there was one that really struck me. There's this huge carpet as big as 100 walls. No, it wasn't that big, but it was like this big, and on one side there's a great effulgence, and on the other side, like this, there's a bearded prophet, and he's going like this because he's confronted with the very powerful, fearful, supreme Lord, and he's like this. So that's people's usual concept of what religion is. Confronted with that, the all-powerful in such a way. Mm. Awesome. Terrifying. Because he's all-powerful. He can, even if you go into the room of the president or something like that, you know, that everyone, when you're like that, you become afraid because he's so powerful. And if he says, off with your head, it's off with your head. But Krishna consciousness is so different because we see in our mind's eye, we see the wonderful pastime of Mother Yashoda. She's picking up a stick And Krishna is going like this. His consciousness is so much captivated by her love for him in a motherly way, that he's controlled. The Supreme Absolute Truth is being played with by his devotee, and this is bringing him the most ecstatic pleasure, the unlimited love she has for him. So, very, very difficult to understand. So Sukadeva is going to be explaining this, that even Brahma, or the denizens of heaven, the demigods, they're seeing the absolute truth acting in this casual way with his friends. And someone says, "Oh, Krishna, eat this," and they put the jasmine flowers in his, you know, in his patty, and then he goes, "Oh, why are we doing it all?" And they're thinking, how is it possible that he is the absolute truth? That how is it possible that he is our master, the Supreme Lord? Just like we used the example of the king yesterday. So someone who's only used to seeing the king in the throne room, surrounded by guards in a very stern way, and making plans for war and dispensing justice, then somehow or another he goes into the king's private quarters and he sees the king's grandson riding on his back as if he's a horse, and he's going like this, get up, and the king is so much in the mood of a grandfather that he's going. And someone goes in there who doesn't belong. He's not qualified to be there, really. He doesn't have the love. He doesn't know the king's power is always with him. And this is just what he's doing for pleasure, because he's exchanging love with his. So someone like that, he says, how could that be the king? His little boy is slapping him over here. This couldn't be the king. Yeah. Couldn't be the king. So the demigods, the devatas, and Lord Brahma, or even common ordinary people, they shouldn't be glimpsing behind the curtain of these very intimate pastimes. But also, what we're going to hear as the pastime develops is what happens when Brahma, who is the greatest of all the demigods, he says, how is it possible that this boy is my master? So what unfolds as this chapter unfolds is this incredible pastime where Brahma sees this little boy exhibit unlimited power, which makes the power that he has appear to be completely insignificant, like the power of that the snow has to give light in the middle of the night, or the power of a little glowworm bug has to give light in the daylight. So he's going to be confronted with the unlimited power of Krishna, and he's going to be shocked, because he's still like a little boy, but he has unlimited power. This is the inconceivable Shakti, the inconceivable power of the Supreme Personality. So we shall continue. So on Thursday I have to go somewhere, but what should we do, Radha Mansuri? What do you think, Jagtarini? Is it all practical? We have a class on Wednesday. We won't hear it all, but we'll hear a little bit more next Wednesday. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Thank you. We came across any explanations why Madhva Acharya's followers would not accept
simple explanation. That would mean if they accept this, two things. One is because Lord Brahma says, the verse escapes me right now, that you are the supreme, you are the original Narayana. Narayana's tam nahit sarva dehinam. That you, Brahma himself says that you, to Krishna, you are the original Narayana. And they are worshippers of Lakshmi Narayana. As the prime original Supreme Lord. So they wouldn't accept, they can't accept that Brahma, who is the head of their sampradaya, would, if he says that Krishna is the original, that means that Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam, he's the Supreme Lord. So they don't accept that. They prefer to worship according to great awe and reverence. So that's one reason. And the second reason is because they can't accept that Brahma, the head of their sampradaya, could be illusioned in this way. Illusion by Krishna and not accepting, not understanding the truth. So those are the two reasons. So they say there's been some interpolation, and that this, so they don't accept this chapter. But so,
in the comparison, for example, Shaivites would not accept
Somebody also in the Banasura pastime. So many pastimes. Because they are very much Vaidhi Bhaktas. So for them the rules and regulations are the highest. And Mahaprabhu's great gift is to reveal that the rules and regulations are purposeful to that we have the potency to purify the consciousness and bring us even higher than the realm of the spiritual world of the Kunta, but to the realm where spontaneous love rules the realm of Vrindavan. In Vaikuntha there is only one rasa, basically, the servitude. So Mahaprabhu revealed the highest limit of rasa.
They have it is Krishna, or they still taking it as an expansion of Mahaprabhu.
But they worship the worship of and they also there's some differences. Remember they worship Baladeva as a jiva. Lakshmi Devi is, that is the Shakti of the Lord. So there's some differences. And there are some other differences too, they say about the Jivas. But we don't want to, my own thought is that if you talk to anyone long enough, you'll find enough of a difference to have a big fight about. Even whether it's in the Madhvas and the Gaudiyas, or the Gaudiyas and the Gaudiyas, or the Gaudiya Mats and the Gaudiyas, and the people, in one the same temple. It's just Kali Yuga. Everyone, there's enough to fight about. So our real fight is not. You can discuss philosophy, but it should be in the mood of. Should be, in my humble opinion, not a philosophical discussion rather than an emotional argument that ends in "and I hate you" and "you're all in mine" and whatever. So our real argument is with the atheists. That's what Prabhupada said. And therefore, you can see by his personal example, he put so much emphasis into the scientific preaching. But yet, when you talk philosophy, then you can talk philosophically and using Shastra as a basis, the epistemological basis, you can establish one principle above another, so philosophically. But it's not our real, really respect, great respect. That's how I look at it. Because after all, it's Krishna who inspires people to be. It's given them some inspiration. Glorious inspiration, too. So glorious that Mahaprabhu took initiation in that sampradaya to glorify it. So Mahaprabhu travels around South India. He has an argument with the Tattvavadis, the some of them more advanced than others. And he has a discussion with the Sri Sampadaya and Sri Rangam about Lakshmi Narayan and Sitaram and Krishna. But especially with the Sri Sampadaya and those people, he was always very friendly and cordial.
I just heard today that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Jaganapuri, he still observed on occasion Param Navami.
On what?
Param Navami, Jaganapuri.
Yeah. He enjoyed it.
So when he was only after his travels with him were over, and he was residing in Jaganapuri, and he still observed Param Navami.
Well, yeah, it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. They would dress up as monkeys and everything, and they'd play. Mm. They'd get into a particular mood. Because this is like they'll see Lord Ramachandra's pastimes as a mood of Krishna wanting to enjoy in a particular mood. Also Lord Srimadhi. It's different moods of Krishna, how they say.
Can't kind of be surprised to me because many opinions when Govinda was in Jaganapuri, the place where he is most in Radhava.
That's when he was with the devotees. He would do this when all the devotees were. He wasn't as internal as he was when he was all alone in the last 12 years, in the middle of the night, only with Ramananda Roy and Sukhdamana. This is, he would be playing with the devotees. He would be very deeply in that mood. Okay, we should stop. Shubha Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Krishna Rasa Pripa 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 Shri Krishna Rasa